Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Battle of the Ley Lines, the final chronicle. New year, new me. Where did you put the old me? Does the new me still remember old me's passwords? Do we have the same dress sense? And why is it always that old me comes back 3 days in? What happens to the new me? Was it too hard to maintain a fake identity for more than 3 days? Anyway, that's enough of an identity crisis for this year. Welcome to the first episode of 2022. We're getting near the end of season 4. We're all a little bit nervous. Anyway, for this episode, I would like to thank our incredible cast. James Hare, David McCran, Helen Vary, Kitty Bennett, Linda Dootson, Sam Perry, Vicky Holding, and Alex Gardner. Also, our amazing editor, Cal Graham, and our composer, Dennis Moen. And hey, thanks to you too.
The barrister's seated behind his table with parchments and candles and so on, and Adamant comes in accompanied by a small, self-important, middle-aged man. The baron gets up and shakes the man's hand.
Father, the mayor.
Ah, good morning, morning. Sit you down, Mayor Donkins.
The hurried-looking mayor sits down where indicated.
Oh, thank you, thank you. I'll,
A drink?
No, thank you. I'll...
Adamant! A drink for the mayor.
Adamant turns to a side table and pours out two goblets of wine, bringing one to the mayor and the other to his father.
Oh, maybe just one, then. Baron, it's about these here demons and such like.
Oh, getting worse, are they?
The mayor sips his wine.
Yes, and some of them are remaining outlaws from woods, have been possessed and are doing raids on geese and cattle.
Oh, that's bad.
He takes a gulp of wine.
Fortunately, however, most of those brigands are out with you and being disciplined. So at least they're not raiding and getting possessed, like.
Aye. But I don't know they'll be much use as a fighting force, if need be.
Well, you can't really do battle anyway, as these raids are just occasional. But they're getting worse, you know. Getting worse.
I'll ride out with the lads and see if I can see any sight of them. Don't know what to do about the demons, though. That was Mother Euphemia's role, and she's away. Just at the moment. Adamant, saddle your friends and get ready to ride.
Sir!
Adamant nods and rapidly departs. The baron stands up and shakes the hand of the mayor. The baron has just finished seating his wife. He sits. The rest of the family, including Imelda and the knights, also sit down. The baroness puts her napkin on her knee while Gudgeon serves the soup and Spillikins pours the red wine.
Did you find any of the trouble causers, Harold?
No, not a one. Sent the lads back and rode around for a while. But it was as silent as a dead sheep's ass.
When we got back, though, the men said that their bedding had attacked them when they attempted to clean their rooms.
And there was that blue demon thing.
Oh, yes. Robin said one of the maids found a blue demon thing in the dairy, but it vanished down through the keyhole like smoke when she screamed.
The baron slurps at his soup, and he burns his mouth.
Ah, Zograt's spear!
He turns and roars at Spillikins.
Spillikins, soup's too hot.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lord.
Spillikins hurries over and pours some wine in it from the carafe. The baron slurps another spoonful of soup.
No, that's better. Well, they'd better not think of attacking this place, that's all.
The men pour out of the dining hall, heading towards the solar. Adamant pulls Burb aside. He has Quinn and Morag with him.
Burb! I forgot to say how amazing your bang tube was.
It was Kazakh's idea as well.
Well, you both did amazingly. Now, can you take Morag, Quinn and I to see it and show us how to operate it? You never know. We might need several of these tubes if we are to be attacked again.
Yeah, we can make loads of them.
The young man head off down the corridor while the baron continues the other way, off to the solar. Uisa and the Baroness are progressing down the street with their visiting baskets, with gingham covers. They knock on individual doors together and they are answered. Each person, elderly, middle-aged, young, looks with fear, embarrassment or terror at their baskets and, politely or less so, refuses their help. Each of the 5 visitees, however, tell them to wait, dodges inside and then returns and exhibits the results of disorder and attack. Holes in their clothes, a broken bucket, a small child painted blue with its hair all wild, that sort of thing. Baroness and Louisa nod sympathetically. At the bottom of the street, Louisa and the Baroness look back up the street and then at each other in concern. They shake their heads. In the castle gardens that evening, the sun is setting and the evening is very romantic as Louisa, in full Pre-Raphaelite Gothic, is kissing Morag.
In the garden.
They are standing under a bower of flowering roses.
When I am yours, I shall have 100 horses.
More kissing.
When you are mine, beloved, I'm afraid your stable will have to be regulated by the budget of the horse master.
Louisa moos and then kisses him again.
Well, when I am yours, I shall certainly wear a different silken gown for every day of the year.
I am afraid that when you are mine, beloved, your silk gowns will be a little curtailed by your personal budget overseen by the steward of the household.
Louisa tosses her hair and steps away from Morag.
Well, I certainly shan't have the stupid steward telling me where I shall go and when I shall go there.
No, my love. That, to a certain degree, will be the right of your new husband.
Louisa steps back again.
Sorry?
Morag steps forward and takes her in his arms again, but she wriggles out and steps away.
Your health and safety will be my responsibility, my love, and I must...
Oh, there's no must in it. I shall be queen eventually, and shall go when and where I want.
Oh, it's not that simple what you want.
Excuse me, my lord, but I want to go and see Mama, and then I want to go to bed.
She curtsies elaborately to him and sails haughtily away. Morag is hanging onto the reins of Fluffy, and Louisa, who is mounted astride, wearing Burb's breeches, is angrily trying to grab them away from him. He is remonstrating with her, and she is quarrelling in return. The Baron enters the yard from the side door and sees them. He heads towards them questioningly.
Hey there, young lovebirds. What's amiss? Good morning, sire. Louisa insists on riding out and it's becoming dangerous. Indeed, wench. Do you listen to your lord and master? It's become dangerous out there.
He is not my lord and master. Yet. And anyway...
No, but I am. So get off that ruddy horse now before I tan your hide.
Louisa thrusts out her lower lip, removes her feet from the stirrups, leans forward and bolts from the horse. She walks huffily away, leaving the reins in Morag's hands. The Baron roars after her.
And take those stuffing breeches off your backside before I take them off for you. If you're going to be a princess, you better start behaving like one.
The Baron turns to face Morag.
There. Start as you mean to go on.
He nods and strides away. Morag looks ruefully pained and watches Louisa. The draper's wife has her back to us and is trying to tug her husband, a fat, greasy, ill-kempt man, into the shop and behind the counter.
No, I won't. Don't. Don't.
I tell you, you've got to serve today.
It's not a man's work.
The draper's wife gives another tug as he holds onto the door jamb.
Then today you can be an honorary woman. It won't kill you.
I don't know what's wrong with you. You don't look no different.
Don't look no different, you blithering moron. Have you seen me?
Oh, maybe comb your hair a bit.
She gives a final tug and he falls into the shop.
You are serving today, my lad.
She turns and the extent of the demon-wrought damage is seen. She has large facial buboes, wild hair, and a squint.
While I go and see that useless herbalist woman.
She stalks out.
It'll take more than a few bloody herbs.
7 men are around the table with the mayor at the head of it. They all look very concerned. They're all talking at once. The mayor bangs his gavel. Talking becomes quieter.
Well, I'm none too happy at these air attacks, you know, but I've lived through wars and battles, and I'm not afraid of a few demons-like.
It will take more than demons to frighten away this fourth generation of respectable merchants.
He points to himself.
No, there's no panic needed when there's good men and true in the matter, and I...
Another big man stands up and inches towards the door.
I'll just see how Mary's getting on, though.
An elderly man gets up and edges towards the door.
And I'm not too sure if I sent them eggs up to the castle.
Corpulent merchant gets up.
Oh, yes, the castle. I have some business with the Baron there. I'll just...
He whizzes to the door and the first two whiz out. The remaining four also rush out of the room, pushing each other out of the way in indecent haste. Inside the study of the convent, the abbess comes into the room, followed by Sister Blodwyn. The abbess limps across to her desk. Sister Blodwyn closes the door and follows her, sitting down opposite.
Well, what do you feel, Sister Blodwyn?
Well, these attacks are getting worse, you know, Mother.
Yes, and after the altar was damaged and went all peculiar after Mavis touched it with her bleeding hand, I rather think that we have opened yet another key and let more evil magic in.
But where'd you go, then?
Well, the Baroness's castle is the obvious place of retreat.
Yes, but with our new novices, there's quite a few of us now. Would she be able to take us all?
There is a large boom from upstairs, and they both look at the ceiling, jump to their feet, and rush out. As the Abbess and Sister Blodwyn hit the stairs, the Abbess still limping, other priests rush out to join them. They all rush up onto the landing and Sister Letitia comes out with a comical blackened face and clothing. Her headdress is off and her hair is all over the place. She turns plaintively to them.
My bedside flowers blew up.
There is suddenly another explosion further along the passageway and they all rush on towards it. Priestesses are all sitting around the three tables. The Baroness stands up and the hubbub lessens.
My daughters, we are going to the castle of the Baron of Breithnach. He is our overlord in times of trouble, like this. Pack a very few belongings, only what you can carry very easily.
Shall I pick the kitchen food stores on the sumpter asses, Mother?
Yes, please, Sister Blodwyn. Do get Sisters Birkwald, Agatha and Butwaga to help you.
Our chalices! Our chalices!
Yes, Sister Letitia. Just pack our few relics onto another donkey and then we really must be off.
The Bess is standing up.
At midday, we meet before the main door, my daughters. Sisters Mavis and Bluster, please bring out the asses.
Yes, Mother.
The sun bless you, my daughters.
The Abbess makes the sun sign and they all repeat it.
And you, our mother.
The Abbess limps out, followed quickly by the senior priestesses, and then the younger ones and the six novices, who are all rather excited. The mother Euphemia, the Abbess, is uncomfortably trotting hard on her donkey, followed by Sister Letitia and her six young novices. The older nuns bring up the rear, with the incubi walking and leading the sumpter asses. The younger priestesses are on foot. The weather is gloomy and there is a threatening thunder. The Abbess anxiously waves them on, glancing up at the threatening sky. They hurry on into the dark of the wood. The family, but not the Baron, inside the dining hall of the Baron's castle, are at lunch. The Baroness is emplacing her napkin and breaking her roll. The butler is pouring wine into pewter goblets. The Baroness looks at Adamant.
Did he say why he isn't joining us, Adamant?
He's talking with the mayor. We've been settling most of the villagers in this morning.
Oh, well, at least we'll have a full attendance at Oisa's wedding. Are there many left in the village?
Some of the farmers are staying with their stock because we can't take all the cows in, as there's not enough room or provender.
Apparently, the draper and his wife are still there because she's guarding her stuff. She says that she believes that the new draper will nick it if she leaves it behind.
Really? That woman? Spillikins, don't forget to put a good plate of food aside for my husband for when he comes in.
Spillikins, who has just dropped some food onto the buffet, guiltily and covertly scoops it back into one of the chasing dishes, half turns around and bows.
Certainly. Oh, certainly, milady.
Adamant, Morag and Quinn come hallooing, waving and galloping across the field towards the woods. As the last four of the ex-brigands vanish into said woods, they all pull up at the fenced woods and look disgusted.
Ah, great. The nearest track is half a mile away, near Dongle's Bottom.
Morag is standing in his stirrups and scrutinising into the trees.
We could go after them on foot.
Hmm? They know these woods better than I. They've been hiding out in them for years.
It's a shame they've deserted just when all these demon attacks starting, though.
It's not just that. They themselves will get possessed and join the others who've already gone nuts too.
Morag sighs and turns his horse's head. The others do as well.
Yeah, but look on the good side. You don't have to feed the brutes.
Adamant nods and shrugs.
True. True.
They all ride away at a walk. Imelda is sitting by the fire, embroidering, and the Baroness is at her working table near the window and writing. The Baroness sits back and reads what she has written.
My dear Countess, I quite understand that you can't fit Louisa's wedding in with all of your busy social schedule. I write now, however, to beg your kind assistance with a little problem we are having in the district of attacks from brigands and demons. If you would kindly send us one of your brigades to help us in our trials, we would be delighted to welcome and garrison them here. We aristocrats must stick together, or we shall be overrun by demons and brigand warlords. I look forward to hearing from you as a matter of urgency, Countess, and subscribe myself yours, as ever, Ethelberta, Baroness of Breathnach.
Baroness leans and faces Imelda.
Do you think they'll come?
I should jolly well hope so, after all you've done for her and her son and that stupid sorcerer of theirs.
Kazakh Burb and two young dwarves are sitting on the floor, pounding black powder in mortars. Quinn is sitting nearby on a chair, reading a book, with another pile of books on the floor right next to him.
It's good your father lent us some helpers for the bang powder. Isn't he afraid of the attackers?
People rarely attack our tribe. We just retreat into the lower strongholds, and when the attackers advance, they get picked off by our pet deep ogres. It's great fun.
Wish we had ogres.
Burb turns and addresses Quinn.
What you doing, Quinn?
Quinn looks up from his book.
Huh? Just researching some defences against demons. That sort of thing. You know, iron and stuff.
Burb returns to his bashing.
I prefer bashing. At least I don't have to read.
The Baroness, Uisa and Imelda are sitting, sewing or writing when a maid comes in, bobbing a curtsy.
Ma'am, the Abbess of the Sanctuary of the Peaceful Tears.
The Abbess comes in and the ladies all stand. The Abbess makes the sign of the sun and bows her head and the ladies return the sign and then curtsy. The Baroness comes forward and takes the Abbess by the arm, steering her towards the fire.
Mother Euphemia, how delightful to see you. I didn't know that I was to have the pleasure of a visit from you, or I would have made a little preparation.
The Abbess smiles, a little embarrassedly, and the Baroness motions them to sit, which they all do.
Actually, my dear Baroness, I'm here with all of my little brood, as we are here to seek sanctuary.
What? From one sanctuary to another?
I'm afraid that there isn't much safety at our own sanctuary at the moment, because we're under attack from demons and explosions and the like.
Where are all of your priestesses, then?
They wait downstairs, in the inner ward of the keep.
The Baroness signals to her daughter and Imelda.
Uisa, go bring the poor ladies in. Sort out their baggage and allocate them rooms. Not near the peasants and not near the night soil man.
The Baroness rings a bell cord and after a while Hadrida appears.
Hadrida, tea and manchets for the Abbess and take some down to the priestesses as well. Uisa will tell you where she's putting them.
Hadrida curtsies, quiescence, and the ladies leave the room, chatting.
Give me your mantle, Mother. Come and warm your feet by the fire. You must have had a worrying journey.
The Abbess removes her mantle. The Baroness takes it and puts it over the back of a nearby chair. She returns to her own.
Thank you, my child. The fact is that we have discovered that these demons are attacking because the keys of sorcery at our convent and of the old priory have been inadvertently activated, and now the ley lines are channeling magical power to the evil ones.
Do we have no resort?
Well, apparently Sister Patience is a reincarnation of Adora, the first priestess of the sun. Sister Patience is supposed to guard the remaining keys, relock the opened locks, and then purify and rededicate the used keys. However, we're just trying to stay alive at the moment. Goodness knows how poor Sister Patience will get around to doing all of this work.
The Baroness goes to take the tea tray from Hadrida, who has just arrived with it. The Baroness places the tray on the large elbow table near to her own chair and next to the fire, opposite the Baroness, and then she sits down.
Now, never you mind, Mother. It's all too much for you at the moment. You just have some manchettes with our own bramble jelly and some rosehip tea.
She starts to mash the tea. The Abbess smiles, sits back in her chair, stretches her feet to the fire and sighs. She looks gratefully at the Baroness.
Thank you, my child.
That was episode 6, The Battle of the Leylands, from the Greenlands Presents. I would like to thank the generous Cal Graham for editing this episode and the slightly eldritch Dennis Moen for musicaling this episode. Anyway, if you want any more information about the Greenlands, check out our Instagram, our newsletter, you know the drill. Anyway, love y'all. Thank you for your support. See y'all next time. And remember, if it sounds like you can hear a loved one calling for you in the woods, it's not. Also, don't run. They can see when you run. Walk. Praying won't help. Good luck!